This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey there, friends. It's your boy, Michael Cruz Kane, back again with another episode of A Good Cry, where I talk with notables and friends, etc., about their experiences with grief. Grief thought for the week. You ever look at a picture of your family or whoever and picture in that negative space the person that you've lost? You know what I mean? Like you're sitting around a table, there's a little bit of space between two people, and your son or your sister or your husband or your grandfather would fit right there. Been thinking about that a lot lately, looking through pictures of my family. And it's weird, you know, I talk about this a lot. The feeling of sadness that accompanies those thoughts is also a feeling of remembrance. So there's like a weird balance where the sadness feels good and the feeling good feels more sad. Anyway, something to think about. Also, this week, A Good Cry was nominated for a Webby Award. I would love it if you would vote for us. I'll put the link in the description to this episode. Give us a vote. Winning stuff like that helps us be more visible, etc. Helps keep the podcast growing and advertisers and so forth and so on. So it'd be a big help. Why don't you vote? Why don't you rate? Why don't you subscribe? Why don't you share this very episode, which features the fantastic and brilliant Ashley Gavin, with whom I had a truly wonderful conversation. We talk about her losing her dad when she was 11, about her losing her therapist, about being in therapy for as long as she can remember, and just generally having a good conversation. I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. Without further ado, Ashley Gavin. Ashley, thanks for doing this. We start our podcast off with the question, how would you describe your relationship with grief?
Intimate. Grief is a huge part of my life. I'm open about talking about it. I've experienced a lot of it. I kind of love it. I don't know who I'd be without grief. I don't know who I am without grief, honestly.
What is that? Well, you say you've experienced a lot of it. Can you explain that a little more?
Yeah, I lost my dad when I was 11 and my sister was 7. And I don't have a super great relationship with my mom. So that was a really big loss. And I have 3 older half-brothers who are my father's children. And when I lost my father, my brothers began, they're much older than I am, and they began to kind of disappear from my life as well. So I had this like loss of my brothers, not actually, but like kind of trickled out of my life. So.
Gotcha. So they didn't die. They became like estranged kind of.
Estranged. Yeah. And I don't really talk to them. As an adult, I've been like, oh, maybe I should reach out, but I haven't really decided what I want to do. So that was like my first introduction to grief. Massive introduction to grief at a young age, I would say. And yeah, I've lost less important people in my life, you know, grandparents, friends. But that was the one where I was like, all right, this will probably cover it for a while.
How did your dad die?
Cancer, lung cancer, smoker.
Oh.
Yeah. On 420 too. That's when he died. Isn't that crazy? I don't know what to do with that information.
That's a brutal irony. There's like
it's very strange. Yeah.
There's a hack joke in there someplace.
Definitely.
He died of lung cancer. So did that mean that you knew he was going to die a while before he died?
Kind of. He was not sick with diagnosed cancer for very long, although it obviously had been in his body for years because he was just totally so much. The doctors were just like all the cancer in his bones, all over his body when he was diagnosed. But my dad had had a stroke about a year and a half before that and all kinds of health problems. So he was sick a long time, but it wasn't like we knew he was going to die. Although I'm sure had anyone been more equipped to deal with the situation of health, I don't know how much my mom was saying you should go to the doctor. I'm sure she was, but he didn't, you know, really. He was one of those guys. You know, I feel like it's not as common anymore, but these guys that don't go to the doctor. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly. I know what you mean. I'm the opposite of that. I'm like, oh, I think I took a weird breath. I should have a surgery.
You should go to the doctor immediately. Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And were you close with your dad? You say you don't have a very close relationship with your mom, but were you and your dad close?
I feel like at 11, it's hard to know what a close relationship to a parent is because you don't really have much of a choice. Sure. When you're an adult, you have a choice. You know, each person has a choice of working on the relationship or the friendship or the whatever-ship. But I do feel like I am my dad's kid as opposed to my mom's kid. And I did, like, love my dad very much. So, yeah, I think, yeah, I do. Yeah, I think we were close.
What do you mean by your dad's kid? What does that mean?
My dad is, like, what I think of as, like, success in America. Like, his parents were children of immigrants and did the best they could, but were, like, never really financially, quote-unquote, successful. And also, like, had their own problems. Alcoholism, it runs in my family. His parents were alcoholics. And my dad, like, had his own business and was successful he didn't even go to college. And that has always been, like, a thing in my brain. Prevented me from doing stand-up comedy for such a long time because I was like, that's such a selfish career. And how are you going to be successful? And how are you going to take care of a family if you, like, become, like, a stand-up comedian or, like, an actor or something? So
right.
I think that I, like, really kind of wanted to, like, have a life like my dad and do it myself as much as possible. Like, and he was very funny, super funny guy. I remember that about him. It's hard to remember a lot of things. It's interesting. Trauma will do that to you.
I think about, like, there have been so many times when I've retold the story of my son dying to whoever and had other people who were there be like, that did not happen. That also did not happen. Mm. That part you're saying is not true. And I was a full adult at that time.
I didn't even ask you about your grief.
That's okay.
How I'm so rude.
You don't have to do that. No, you don't have to do that. thank you for asking. My son died when he was 34 days old. So the very, very young, just a little over 10 years ago. But I do relate to that sense of trauma being like, whoops, you won't remember any of this correct. Like, good luck putting this back together. And especially because you were 11, you said, right? Mm.
Yes.
Like, even if I tried to remember anything from being 11, I would get that wrong.
It's tough.
And nothing bad had happened to me yet.
Yeah, so it's hard to remember things.
When you say that your dad was funny, do you have a memory of being like, oh, I remember this funny thing that he did?
That's one of the things that I, like, remember the most is some of his jokes. Maybe I don't remember this. Maybe someone just told me this and I think I remember it. But my dad, okay, so this is, like, kind of, we might get canceled for me saying this, but because I was a child and because my dad is dead, I will not get canceled.
I can't wait.
So my dad, like, thought it would be funny if we played Peeping Tom.
Okay.
I was, like, really into spying. I, like, wanted to be a spy at the time. And my dad was like, we should be Peeping Toms. But, like, totally as a joke. We weren't going to actually go and stare at naked women. It was, like, totally a bit, but, like, a bit about being a Peeping Tom, which now would not fly.
Right. Peeping Tom was, like, a cute thing to say.
Yes.
Like, oh, isn't that, like, it's a quaint way to be a pervert.
Yeah.
But now that phrase doesn't even exist anymore. It's like, now you're a prisoner.
Yeah. So we got, like, binoculars and we spied on the neighbors and nothing inappropriate was happening. And I'm sure he, like, kind of, like, knew what he was doing. But he would joke about it. I wonder if he knew I was gay. I think he did. I think he definitely knew.
Yeah.
It was about women. Yeah. It was never about men. We weren't trying to peep on men. We were peeping on women, as is traditionally done.
Sure. Yes, of course. Historically, the peeping Thomas is only peeping on women.
Right.
Do you think, like, I mean, that would be definitely a clue in that area. Is that something you think about a lot, like whether your dad knew that you were gay?
Yeah, because it's like super important to me that he knows that I'm gay. That's like the one, like there's a couple of things that I wish I could tell him. And being gay is like definitely, I'm going to cry. How many people actually cry on the podcast?
I would say a fair number, but because it's only audio, usually what that means is people listening hear like 5 seconds of silence and they don't know what's happening.
Well, I'm crying and I would love to come out to my dad. I wish I could come out to my dad. I really believe in my heart that he knew because I'm the gayest person on the planet. And I think he would have been like, I think he would have been cool about it. And maybe there's like a thing in my imagination because my coming out to my mom did not go well. Maybe there's like this self-preservation piece of it where it's like, oh, he would have been cool about it because we played Peeping Tom and he wanted to show me naked ladies. You know what I mean? Like he was down.
But yeah, we could vibe on the naked lady level.
Yeah. But more concretely, he always pointed out to me when people were gay, unnecessarily. So unless my father was bisexual or closeted gay, I don't know why he would do that to me.
Just like a hobby that he picked up in Reader's Digest or something.
He'd always be like, YMCA, those guys, they're gay.
Those guys are gay. Just out of no place. Just pointing out all the gay people.
Like in media, when they would come up, he'd point out to me when they were gay.
I mean, I obviously can't speak for your dad, but that definitely is a dad tactic to try and get your child to admit to something that maybe they don't want to say. To be like, oh, well, you know, you're watching TV and be like, huh, that kid seems sad about something that happened at school today. Have you ever felt that way?
I mean, it would have been so inappropriate. I was not a sexual being. I like couldn't, I knew that I was gay in like a very detached, non-sexual way. I knew I was gay, but I was young at this point. So I don't know, maybe he was trying to get me to come out. Maybe he was like, I don't have much time left. I'm really unhealthy in all of my habits. You better tell me that you're gay.
You have to tell me now. When he was dying, how quickly did it go from he's sick to he's dead?
Very fast.
Do you remember?
Very fast. We were on a family vacation and he had to go home. And my mom kept up with the family vacation. I think like another few days.
Wait, what do you mean? You went home, your mom stayed on vacation and you all went home?
Yeah, with the kids. And my dad went home and I think he had like a week after he went into the hospital before he died.
Oh, wow. It's so fast.
It was so fast, yeah.
And do you remember how you felt at that time when he died?
It felt longer somehow because I remember saying to I've been in therapy my whole life. And I remember saying to my therapist, I was like, God, this just like so embodies my relationship with my mother. And like, but I remember saying to my therapist, I should visit my dad. I was scared. I was scared to see him in the hospital.
Then you were 11 in therapy saying I should go see my dad.
Yes. When gotcha. What should have been happening was my mother orchestrating planned trips to see my father in the hospital. That's like what should have been happening. But now you understand my mother. So this is just like a crash course on like how I became a comedian. So yeah, and like I remember thinking like I should go see him and feeling scared about it. I didn't want to see him in the hospital. I think it was so scary.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Not even for a kid, for an adult to see someone that you're like, this person's on the way out is to be confronted by something that most people spend their whole lives being like, no, you don't die. I mean, we talk about dying, but that's not like a real...
Yeah.
It's not a real thing that happens. It happens. Yeah. Other people die. You don't. And no one you love does.
Right. Oh, I'm like overly prepared for my death and how it will affect my children. I'm like a nutcase, like about... I'm overly prepared. No one... I'm almost afraid I will make them afraid of my death. I am so prepared for... my death. That's why I work out. That's why I go to the doctor. That like I will never like I will at all costs avoid dying on my children. Like that is like number one.
Wow. I mean, it really like that level of thought goes into like I'm at the gym so that I won't die, so that I'll be alive for my kids.
it's not the only reason. Like, I do, like, feel flabby sometimes, and I definitely, like, enjoy the endorphins. Yeah. But as soon I did start hitting an age where I was like, you don't want to die. Like, you don't want to die on your kid.
Yeah. Do you have kids right now?
No. No kids.
Okay.
I haven't even finished freezing my eggs.
You saying that makes me think that I need to plan more, but I'm also not going to die.
No, you would never die.
Not me. I mean, yeah, just get through all this. Other people will die, but not me. I'm invincible.
Right.
When your dad finally died, like, do you remember those feelings?
I think I went into about a full decade of shock.
That sounds right.
I was just talking about this earlier, maybe like anticipating being on this and like talking about this. When I got the email, I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, I love talking about my dead dad. This is awesome. I talk about it in my stand-up. There's so few places you can openly talk about your dead father.
Yeah.
I think there was two pieces of it. I think I went into shock. And I think there was another piece that was like recognizing that this was going to be different between me and my mom. My dad was the protector in my family. And I think instantly I knew that I now protected myself and that it would be difficult. And my sister, because I had a little sister. So I think in some ways, instantly, it's so weird because I'm such an open, emotionally open person. But I think with my immediate family, what happened was a very strong wall came up between me and my mom and my sister. And obviously it like served different purposes. But like being vulnerable about my feelings with my mom, with my sister, was very something that I like just couldn't do. And thank God I was in therapy, because I imagine that maybe if I had not had all this training and talking about my feelings, that would have been really different. But I think it was like shock and almost like just like get through this. It was just, I think that was what it kind of was. Because when I went away, when I went away to college and I had some camp times later on, I was very successful in those environments, but I had a hard time at home when I went home. So I think it was sort of like I knew that I just needed to get through what I was about to go through.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, also, I think at home, there are all these established relationships and like, ways of transacting among yourselves that are now totally, potentially ruined. And so it's like,
yeah,
when your dad gets removed from the living, it only makes sense that there's like scaffolding and all kinds of shit that goes up to try and prop up all the things that he used to hold up, whatever they were.
Yeah. Dude, were your other children alive when you lost your son?
My 12-year-old son is a twin, and it's his twin brother who died.
Okay.
So he was alive, but he was, a month old when his brother died. So he has no memory of that.
Is he a superhero? That sounds like he'll be a superhero.
Yeah. He fights crime at night. He has to get his schoolwork done. I don't know. He's not a superhero, but I will say that he is great. They're both pretty, pretty great. They're not like astrophysicists or anything, but they're just like good kids, which I do not mean that as a credit to myself at all, possibly a credit to my wife. But like the death of their brother is something that we talk about. And it is definitely something that changed the landscape of our family, even though he was barely ever alive. You know what I mean? Like he was only alive for a second, and it still like blew a crater through the family of like, you just assume things are going to go a certain way. This will happen, then this will happen, then this will happen. And for a child to die, it's like, well, now nothing's going to happen anymore. No things happen. Everything's crazy.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it was also about a decade. I wasn't like keeping it a secret or anything, but it was about a decade before I was like, I think I want to talk about this all the time now. I think I spent a lot of time putting walls up that were keeping everybody except my wife out. And then it was like, I don't know how to be in the world without this also being with me a lot of the time.
My aunt lost her son at a very young age. SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome.
Uh-huh.
And she wrote a book about it, and it's like a very present part of, I was not alive, but it's a presence in the family functions for sure.
Jesse's her son.
Yeah, yeah.
So that happened before you were born?
Before I was born. But I know about Jesse, and I can, there's things in the house, pictures.
And was the loss of Jesse in any way meaningful to you when your dad died? Did your brain connect those things at all or no?
My aunt was especially warm to me. And I think I felt that for sure, that my aunt Judy was she had a deeper understanding, I think, of what was happening.
Is she your dad's sister?
No, my mom's sister.
Your mom's sister.
That's the other thing about the loss of my dad is I don't have family on my dad's side. Like when my dad died, I lost all connection to my dad's side. I don't have grandparents. I don't have cousins. My dad's brother committed suicide or took his life, or a victim of suicide rather. And my brother, my brother's. So I have no family on that side.
That's an added layer to grief, I would imagine, because it's also all these stories about your dad or whatever, someone to be like, oh yeah, when your dad was your age, he XYZ.
Yeah. I wish I had more of that.
So Judy was extra warm to you because she had understanding of what death was that other people maybe didn't have?
Understanding and could talk about it with fluency. I feel like so many people, they just don't know when to laugh at the jokes, what to say, how to even, they're so afraid of it. And it's so interesting to me because I have no fear of the concept of death. It's just so a part of my life. It's truly crazy. My best friend lost his partner to COVID, a friend of mine. And we talk about this all the time, how it's just people are just so uncomfortable talking to you. I can't even imagine. I mean, people must have been so uncomfortable talking to you because losing a child is the...
they are pretty uncomfortable. It's like you've handed someone a bomb that's already gone off. The bomb has already exploded, but the whole time they're like, whoa, holy shit. And you're like, no, it's that can't hurt. That's off.
Yes.
But it's the only thing they can think of. And there is when someone has been through loss that you're like, okay, well, this is someone who I can just be chill with. We
yes.
can just talk about it. And if we don't want to talk about it, we don't. And if we do want to talk about it, we do.
Yeah.
When we do talk about it, it's not like, okay, all right, are you okay?
It's real. It's real. It's an actual conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. And I'm sure you find this too, even though the loss was a while ago, that when you bring up stuff like this, there are people who are like, now they're sadder than you are. And
yes.
You're like, oh, okay. I got to deal. Now I have to deal with this.
Yeah. It's interesting. I had a girlfriend once who made me framed a thing that my dad owned. She took it to a store. She got it framed. And it was the most meaningful gift because she just wasn't afraid to really talk to me about it and let it be in our space. Constantly. We hung it up. My dead dad is in the room.
Yeah.
So that was such a meaningful gift in that way. We
of
broke
course.
Up. I'd love to be like, she's my wife now, but that's not that would be such a better ending to that story. That's when I knew we were gonna break up.
That's when I knew No, but that I mean, for me. When my son died, I had my wife.
Yeah.
And we also had another son.
You really won the lottery with that. I got to be honest. You had an insurance policy on your son.
It really is true. If we had left the hospital with no children, I think it would have been much, forgetting how sad it would have been, it's also that having another kid made us be like, we have shit to do. Like he doesn't even really know. Like he's shitting his pants. He's not going to be like, oh, are you sad? Well, then I won't shit my pants and right. I won't need food until you're done being sad.
Gave you reason to live.
Yes. And you have to, it gives you like busy work to keep yourself occupied. And it's also like with someone that you love, and because they're twins, it's like, this is in a very bizarre way. Like this is the person who died is here, kind of.
Are they identical?
Yeah.
Were they identical?
Identical twins.
You must get this all the time, and I'm so sorry, but I want to know how your other son, like, I can't, that bond is, like, so crazy strong. He must have felt something with this person being absent, but he was so young that it's, like, impossible to know how he felt.
Yeah, I don't know. As he gets older, he spontaneously talks about it less and less. It is something that we would talk about, like, because, you know, he's known, as long as he could know things, this has been one of the things that he has known. And he would, you know, infrequently ask a question about his brother or, you know, just like say his name or something. And I think we were watching, oh man, just like the worst movie. It was, like some Ben Affleck movie where he's a basketball coach and also an alcoholic maybe. But I think in that movie, he has a son who dies. It's a movie that was bad that we started watching 40 minutes into the movie.
Okay.
And he asked me a question about his brother. I don't remember what it was. And then he just started sobbing. And it was like, oh shit. Like that was like, I hadn't seen that happen before, that the thought of his brother had moved him that much. But I don't know, on the daily, I don't know how much he, because Fisher was never alive as long as he was, you know, a person. I mean, he was alive for the first 30 days of his life, 34 days. But it's not like they used to play tag together or whatever.
Were they together during that?
They were together. They were in isolettes in the neonatal intensive care unit. But there would be times where we would like hold them together. We would do, I don't know if you know what kangaroo care is, Ashley. Does that mean something to you?
No.
Kangaroo care is when the parent, or anyone, I guess, is shirtless and you put the babies skin to skin. I should call it that instead of the kangaroo thing. But so we would do that with both of them from time to time. And we have like one of my favorite pictures ever, which is a picture of my wife with both of them. And Fisher, our son who died, is holding Truman, who lived's hand. So, you know, I'm not like big into whatever spirits or I don't know, whatever else. So I couldn't tell you what connection the two of them have, but I could, even in the absence of any kind of like supernatural energy, whatever, it seems very plausible to me that there would be some kind of negative space that he feels in the world.
I mean it on the biological level of like you're in the womb with another thing and then you're ripped from that thing. That alone has got to be jarring to a baby. I don't know how babies absorb that kind of feeling at that age and what impact it makes on their life, but I know it makes an impact. There's no question that you're like next to this thing and then it's taken from you.
Sure.
And so I'm curious at that. I wish I could understand that.
I mean, I wish I could understand it too. I wouldn't even know how to get that out of my 12-year-old son. I think I kind of just have to let it go.
He doesn't know either, I don't think. He just has it in him somewhere.
Yeah. Well, why? How did we get onto that? Oh, you were talking about the gift that you got.
Oh, yes.
From
yeah.
your former girlfriend. And like that. Someone like having the trust in themselves and in you to walk into that emotional space is tremendous.
Yeah.
And it's like totally unforgettable. And there are very few people in my life, even today, even people with the best intentions, lovely people who know that I want to talk about it. And then you start to talk about it with them and you're like, nah, you don't want to talk about this.
Yeah.
Your dad died many years ago. How has your perception of that grief changed in all that time?
So especially now, I'm like definitely like my therapy is so intense right now and has been for like the past 2 or 3 years. So like even right now, I'm like evolving on this and like feeling more. But I would say like for the first 10 years, maybe less, maybe 7, 8 years, I really didn't grieve at all. I did not cry. Anything that I had, if I had thoughts on it, it was private. I remember my therapist even prompting me to talk about it. I did not talk about it. It was too big. It was just...
Have you had the same therapist this entire time?
Yeah, and he died not long ago. That was rough.
Yeah. Selfish.
Fucking asshole. No, that was rough. His funeral is coming up, actually.
Oh, so he just recently died?
Yeah, but...
Oh, I'm so sorry.
He told me, yeah, he died of cancer, and that was a long process. That was because he went into remission, and then he got sick again. So he was like, you have 1 year of therapy left. I was like, fuck, that like totally transformed my life, actually. Literally. That was like back in like 2018. And then he went into remission, then told me he had cancer again. I was like, okay, this time I'm better equipped, but fuck. And then I got a new therapist. And then he passed away a couple months ago.
Oh, shit.
Yes. I wasn't even thinking about that when we started the show. That just... just so many dead people in my life. don't hang out with me.
You're cursed. So many people die, I think, is the thing. Like, a lot of people. I mean, yeah. Almost all of us are
yes.
gonna do it.
Maybe everyone feels that way. That they're surrounded by death, but death just surrounds us, all of us.
I think you do get to like whatever age and start to go, huh, people do appear to be dying now,
yeah.
Which I didn't know that they did.
Yeah. I remember when people would lose a grandparent, I'd be like, come on, that's nothing. Nothing. You're sad about that?
Yeah, I do think it is like everybody only knows however sad they've been. You know what I mean? Like I remember for sure, like when my son died, I remember riding up the elevator with someone in the building that I lived in who was just like sobbing, and she told me that her dog was sick, and I was like, oh, that sounds terrible. I bet that could be terrible, you know.
Yeah.
That it really can be, but I see that and I'm like, right, that would be that's what a normal person's most sad is, something like that.
My grief is so different than people who have their first big grief in their adult life. My friend lost his partner. Awful. One of the most awful things I've watched. Truly horrendous. But his response to grief is so much more active. Well, this is what I was saying. His is so much more active. He had so much anger about other people's less grief. Whatever they were going through, he was like, my fucking partner died. And I think that's totally within his right to have that feeling when your partner has died. That's so hard. But for me, as a child, I had no feelings until finally I graduated high school. And I started just feeling really sad, and I had no idea why. And it was because I was graduating and my dad wasn't going to be there. And that was the first time that I was like, oh, what is grief? And it almost feels like I never had that powerful, you're incapacitated, like you don't want to get out of bed. I felt depressed like that, but I never had that from grief. It feels like the grief seeps out of me. Like it's just like a leaky faucet. And for all the years that I couldn't grieve or I like didn't know how to grieve, it feels like I just continue to grieve. On podcasts, in my stand-up. I'm just like constantly trying to like almost like get this out because I never had that powerful wave of grief that I've seen other people have. And I do not envy those. I do not envy you or my friend because it was brutal. It was brutal to watch.
Are there other, you talked about your high school graduation. Are there other events like that as you've gotten older that have really like brought home your feelings for your dad?
Yeah, I honestly just feel like my entire life, this might be why I'm just really kind of going through it right now. But right now, this has been the most successful period of my life. I've been a comedian for 8 years. My podcast, I started it almost 2 years ago. And in a couple days, 2 years ago, it went viral. I continued to go viral. And then, you know, a few months ago, I signed with this agency. I'm working on all these amazing projects. I'm touring. Not to sound like an asshole, like, because it truly is like 100% luck that I went viral. And
I'm sure that's not true.
I appreciate that. I had tried to go viral and hadn't, and then I did. But now I can like say confidently, oh, I'm a successful comedian. Like, I am successful. I could have a family. Like, that is something that I could do. And at this point, support. I'd probably have to move out of the city, but I could like support a family on my comedy life. And the fact that I can't share that with him is so fucked up. It's so fucked up to me. That's bigger than the high school graduation, the college graduation, my first job. I'm sure my first kid will be a nightmare, or my wedding. But because this is what my dad meant to me. My dad was the parent. He was supportive. He was financially supportive, emotionally supportive. And I feel like I have become that person in some ways. I just am so upset that he can't see it. It's like, you become a comedian because you're like a fundamentally fucked up person. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then you like think, if you're self-aware, you like try to think about, okay, well, what specifically is fucked up about me that I like am a comedian? And then you like solve that problem. It's like fascinating. You solve that problem. You're like, oh, I wanted to be my dad to protect myself from my mom. And now I am that person. And I'm not well. Didn't fix it. Fuck.
Wait, I got this was supposed to solve it.
Yeah. What do you mean this doesn't fix it? I was on this wild goose chase my entire life. It was never actually supposed to work out. And then it did. And you're like, well, why am I not emotionally well?
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
You mentioned that, you know, it still feels fucked up sometimes. Do you think there will be a day when it won't feel fucked up? Do you want there to be that day?
I want there to be that day, but that day will never come. I know that.
Why do you say that? I'm not trying to argue against it. I'm interested in the way you think about it.
Probably for two reasons. One, on a purely biological level, I have PTSD and my nerves will never go back to what they were.
Right.
So, like, I'll always live with anxiety. That's just, like, a fundamental fact. Like, I'm never going to have an okay brain. My brain will always have PTSD from when, like, my dad died and my childhood. So there's that.
Yeah, right. The word trauma is a word that I've always been so hesitant to apply to my tragedy. And
oh, dude, you have so much trauma.
Yeah, but it really is like, when I brought that up with my wife, she was like, no, dummy, that's like kind of what that word's for. Like, it's for that.
And it feels weird. It does weird to say, because you think about like war vets and someone watching their buddy's head get blown off. But like, your kid dying is the ultimate watching your buddy's head get blown off. Like, that, you didn't see it happen like that. But yeah, that is definitely a form of trauma. Like, legitimate form, not like, but there's that. And then I think, like, I don't know. I'm not like a Zen Buddhist master. I'm never going to get to a point where I'm going to be like, oh, I accept that wanting, Like, I understand all that intellectually, but, like, I don't think that I can ever get my heart and brain aligned to a place where I fully accept this is the cards that I've been dealt in life. There's nothing I can do about it, and I fully accept it, and I let it cascade over my body, and I have no reaction to that. I just can't. I'm not that good. I'm not that good. Maybe some other person could do it, but I can't do it.
But I think that's also what you're saying is also a kind of acceptance. It's like, the fucked upness is here. It's part of it.
Yeah.
Like every once in a while, I'm going to feel like dog shit. And sometimes it'll be 10 times a week. Sometimes it'll be once a month, but it's going to just like roll over me from time to time. I think I feel that way, that I will never quote recover from this. I'm definitely more normal than I was before, but a way that you described at the very beginning, I don't know if you were joking, but you said that you love grief, that there's a part of it that you love. And I feel that way too, of the longing and the sadness and all of that is now, because I'm able to operate with it. Like there'd be times when I couldn't, because I can operate with it. It feels nice to me.
Yeah. I think also can you tell that I've been in therapy my entire life? I think that I, not only because of my relationship with my mother, pre the passing of my father, was already not a healthy model of love. But then to add in the grief, the death, I have grown up with a fundamentally skewed understanding of relationships that I've had to undo and work through. So grief is my childhood. It's tied to my relationship with my mother, what I understand love and emotions to be. Grief is just such a part of it. And I am comfortable in it. It's strange to describe, but I am super comfortable in sadness and suffering. I'm very comfortable there. I've had to work so hard on not living there and understanding that there are other options, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so hard to work on not living there, meaning you were finding the sadness to be overwhelming?
Seeking out partners and situations that put me in a sad place.
Oh, got you. I got you. You were in a bad pattern of trying to make yourself sadder.
Yeah. Yeah. Not understanding that you could have relationships that don't operate in a specific emotional way. I had my first, it's so funny, my therapist said this to me. I had my first ever very healthy relationship not long ago, and it ended very amicably for life reasons. She's a little younger than I am. I want to get married. She was I want to, be in my 20s in New York City and queer and all that. And I was yeah, go do that. You should absolutely do that. So it was very amicable. And I was so worried. I was I don't think I'll ever have a relationship like this again. We didn't really fight. We communicated well. We were very respectful with one another. I was so nervous. I would never find anyone like that again. And my therapist said to me, the first person that you have like that is the hardest to find. You all the other things, that was pre-awareness of knowing what love should be and can be. Right. And that now that you know, it's going to be easier for you to be in a relationship like that because you know what it looks like.
Right. You can recognize it. A thing that I'm curious about that isn't really on the thesis of this podcast, but you switched therapists. What's that like? I would be worried that you're now I got to start all over again from the beginning.
That was my whole thing. That was my whole fucking thing. I was that's what led me to get my fucking shit together emotionally. When he told me he was dying, I was I have to get my shit together. I have to start meditating. I have to, I totally was I cannot, if you're going to die, I cannot live without you. I have to get my shit together. So I got my shit together. Turns out his recommendation, wonderful therapist, totally did not need to get my shit together. She is great. But I was super worried about how I was going to give her all of the information of my entire life.
Did your previous therapist, is there a handoff? How does it?
I asked him that. I was are you going to tell her anything? And he was nope, you're going to tell her. And I was what the fuck? You know?
That's amazing.
Amazing.
It's amazing. I wonder, I'm so interested to know how successful that is for most people, because it seems set up to fail in a big, bad way.
I am extraordinarily, extraordinarily lucky when it comes to my therapy. Most people sound like they have horrible therapists. Horrible. Maybe I do, and I just don't know. But I feel like my therapist essentially parented me from a distance via, like, means that were, like, kosher. If my mom kept fucking something up, he intervened in the only way that he could do appropriately and somehow, like, fucking aced it. I can think of a couple scenarios. But basically, and I think that he picked it. I do feel, maybe I'm bullshitting here, and I think he picked this. I think that I got first pick of all his clients. I think he gave me the best person.
I love that. I choose to believe that that's true, whether it is or not.
Yeah.
It's a nice thing to believe.
I love her. She's phenomenal. And I think she was like some kind of student of his.
That's lovely.
Yeah. He was in academia. So.
Are there any things since your father died, but pertaining to your father, that bring you joy or that like are funny to you, even in the bleakest times, the things that make you laugh?
I had one the other day that made me cry laugh. My dad was, like I said, my dad was one of those dudes where it's like, I'm not even going to the doctor. Like, if he ate a steak, he'd put butter on it. No one does this anymore. I should clarify, my dad was also old as fuck because he had the previous marriage.
Right. The half brothers.
Yeah, he's fucking old. He'd be like, well, how old would he be? Like 80 something today? So old as fuck, dude. And I was at brunch with this girl. Doesn't matter. The brunch goes down. The pancakes are in front. It has this crazy nice, these pancakes are so fucking delicious. We're definitely indulging. There's the pat of butter on the pancake and it melted. And the girl I was with was like, did you eat the butter? Did you just straight up eat that butter? And I was like, no. And then I immediately thought of my dad. And I was like, my dad would have eaten the butter straight up.
Just scooped it.
He would have eaten that butter. And I kind of had this joy. I have so little of that because I was too young. I really didn't get to know him. I think he knew me. I don't think I really got to know him in this way where we could like joke like that.
Right.
I have a couple memories where I feel like he understood who I was. And I'm so glad I have those. But I think he would just, I think he would think I'm so awesome. Like, I really genuinely feel that way. Like, maybe not, he was a very loving parent, very supportive. So I do feel like even pre-success in comedy, he would have thought it was cool. But I think now that I'm doing okay for myself, I think he would think that was just like the shit. I think he would think that was so cool.
I mean, that's, having that feeling is a tremendous gift to yourself from either yourself or from him or from both of you.
Also therapy.
And therapy. Yes. Yes. We're plugging therapy. If you're listening to this right now and you're not in therapy, go. Therapy is great. Big fans of therapy all around. Do you think of your dad as being someplace now? Do you like communicate with him in any way?
I heard someone who just lost their father like a week ago be like, I was talking to my dad and I was like, shut up. Shut the fuck up. Maybe because they actually talk to their dad as an adult. They feel like they can talk to their dad. I never had that. I just had the bleakest possible like outcome. So like I don't talk to my dad. I think I just feel him in the moments where I miss him. I think I have the moments where there's something that I wish I could have him know about me. And that's where I feel him. That's my communication, I guess. I'm not particularly religious. Right. I would describe myself as scientifically spiritual.
Okay.
There are things that I think are good for your spirit, and they are rooted in things that are good for your brain, your body, the connection of your mind and your body, things like that. Trauma, where is it stored in the body? But yeah, I don't think of him as being anywhere other than in my connection to him.
Yeah, I think those moments where you miss him, or I don't want to speak for you, but for me, all those like ritual moments are like where it's reliable that the feelings will crop up, where it's like my living son graduates from middle school, where you're like, well, he would also have graduated, or like, you know, when he eventually gets married or when he eventually has a kid, all those things.
Oh, I feel for you so much.
It's a lot to be like, that's when I know I can predict it coming then.
Yeah.
But there's 50 billion other times also.
Yeah. Where it's when like, you don't predict it. For me, it's the happiest days. It's the happiest days that I miss him. It's weird.
It's not weird to me. That sounds kind of wonderful. I don't want to try and make you feel good about it, but it sounds nice to me.
The things I wish I could share with him, which are usually happy.
Right.
Something horribly embarrassing happens. I don't particularly want to tell my dad. Dad, I said something on a podcast I shouldn't have said. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess those aren't the...
Honestly, maybe because he was a good parent, I don't feel that way. And maybe someone else who has the burden of an unhealthy relationship with the person that they lost, maybe they do feel that way. And that's sad. That's tough.
If you could, this is maybe a hokey question, but if you could talk to yourself when you were 11, is there any advice you could give to that person?
I don't think it's a hokey question because I'm trying not to weep hysterically at that. I would just let her cry. I think if I could have been an adult that I needed to myself, I think I would have tried to somehow encourage her to cry or to go to someone, anyone. I think that's all I needed was just someone to be an adult. I just needed an adult. The closest I had was my therapist, and I'm so glad that I had him. But I needed something more constant than that. And I think I would have tried to encourage myself to seek it out, or at least to just like wail in my own private time to be like, it's okay if you just like wail. You're allowed to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think as an adult, I can empathize with that. And that's like trying to keep it together when the worst thing has happened for me. And I don't know what it was like for you as a kid. It became out of my hands. Would you try to hold it in for however long? And then you're like, oops, I'm gonna fall on the ground and cry now. Like I can't not cry.
I think that's the difference between a child's grief and an adult. It's almost like my friend, he will just sometimes cry, no matter where we're at. And I'm like totally down for it. I'm like, yeah, let's fucking cry, dude. let's fucking do this. But when I was a kid, it was too big to process. It was just so massive that my brain and body were like, nope, nope. Yeah. So I just didn't for so long. It's actually incredible that children are able to shut down like that, or people are able to shut down like that. And I think it's like, so the ability to fall apart is a gift because it means that you're getting it, whatever needs to be released from you, you're releasing it.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I also think the mechanism, whatever it is inside of you structurally that goes, we like your own brain going, we're going to protect this child from this for a second.
Yes.
Like we're going to fortify her with whatever defense mechanism she needs to survive these next 10 years. And then we'll start taking all that shit down is exactly. Also kind of amazing. I think there is a part of bottling up your emotions and repressing them that sometimes is like, you need to do that. Like, I'm not saying that it's like the healthiest thing to do, but sometimes you just can't handle it. And you're like, I think the thing for me to do right now is to just lock this up for a second. I'm going to cry so much tomorrow.
Right. Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow I'm going to be crying like crazy. But I'm going to need just 2 minutes of just holding everything as tight as I possibly can.
Yeah.
That's not advice I'm giving anyone. I'm just trying to.
No, I think that makes sense on a day-to-day level. I think 10 yes. years of it is too long.
Yes. I would agree that 10 years is too long. What I mean is, I talk to people about this a lot who I feel like are very hard on themselves for the way they reacted to something terrible happening. And to me, it's like, you're not like this, I don't think. But to me, I would want the listeners of this podcast to know the week that you spent pretending that it hadn't happened or whatever.
Of course.
Was your brain being like, you can't handle this yet.
Yes,
so
totally.
We're going to try and give you a sec to handle it. And that's cool. You need that.
Exactly. It's weird because part of grief is just being like, whatever happens, happens. Like, you know, I think that's just part of grief that you're just like, oh, my friend has diabetes now. He probably would have gotten it at some point in his life, but his body during the grief kicked it. Like, it was just like, you got diabetes now.
Hey, now you have diabetes.
Yeah.
I know you were going through some stuff, and I really hate to be the one to tell you this, but I've given you diabetes.
But, like, to me, that's, like, so beautiful as an example to be like, this is out of your control. Like, no matter what you think you're going to react to this, your body's going to be like, actually, your pancreas doesn't work, you little bitch. Like, it's so funny to me that your body will just do what it needs to do.
Yeah. Ashley, this was amazing. Thank you for doing it.
It was great. I'm going to like weep now. I'm going to go and weep.
Okay. I hope that's a good cry, as they say in the biz. This was A Good Cry with Ashley Gavin. I hope it helps. A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Edited and mixed by Caitlin Moldenhauer.
That was a HeadGum podcast.